And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, here we are in the new year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you. Happy New Year. Betty White almost made it. She did not make it into the new year.
That's true.
But she did manage to be alive during every single one of the years that the New York Yankees won a World Series. I don't know if that's significant, but that's true.
Well, it's one way to measure a life.
Listen, I'm reminded of something that you told me, which was that you were watching a television show, and it was an old show which people had a secret. And the question was, what was the secret? And this guy's secret was that he heard the Gettysburg Address. So, you know, history is not that long. History seems to be long. After all, the Civil War, Abe Lincoln, seems like biblical times. And yet, in our own lifetime, we could be with people who were alive in what we were considering prehistoric times.
Yeah, well, you know, America, our history is relatively short compared to other things.
That's right.
You know, my son is over there in Cambridge, England, and I went over with them, and everything looks like it was built in the 12th or the 15th or 16th centuries. That kind of thing. And if you've ever visited Israel in the Middle East, I mean, we were there once, and we're up in the Tiberias, up, you know, along the Galilee, and with our guide, and we're walking. They had a walkway along the water, and I saw something, and I said, "Is that a minaret?" And she said, "Yep." She said, "But it's not that old. It's only, you know, Ottoman period."
I was in England, like your son, and went to a hotel, a nice place in the middle of the country, and was picturesque, and I checked in, and I said, "I'd like to stay in the old section." And the guy looked at me, and he said, "Well, I'll try to arrange it, but you know, the new section was built in 1500.
So you're lucky they didn't put you outside in a thatch-roofed hut.
Was a thatch-roofed hut. That was the new section. It had a thatched roof.
That's a new section, you know. Yeah. My son's got a sweatshirt from Cambridge that says founded 1209. Yeah. My daughter's school, George Washington, thinks it's old. They were 1816 or something like that, you know. They just had their 200th anniversary. So
well, to get from the sublime to the ridiculous, what did you think about last year? What would you say were the one, two, three, what were the biggest political stories, even if they weren't necessarily recognized as stories, but what would you say, looking back, what was politically significant in 2021?
You know, things are intermeshed, but the two stories that are continuing and evolving are, first of all, the insurrection has, in political terms, is very important, and it's gotten more important, and it's evolved and devolved into this fight about truth and what really we should be worrying about. And I want to talk about that a little bit more. And then we still have the continuing COVID story. Don't forget, a year ago at this time, COVID was essentially unchecked. The vaccines had just been developed and hadn't been rolled out, and we had a president who wasn't really all that interested in, you know, getting it done. Remember, he got his shot in secret. The two of them are kind of together. Because it's a fight over which philosophy will win out in terms of governing and moving forward. Are we going to have this one philosophy of you know, the Constitution and truth and adherence to rules and regulations? And then the other one, are we going to have this every man for themselves and alternate fact universe and authoritarianism? You know, we have people all over who are willing to cut off their nose to spite their face. They're showing up in hospitals because they deliberately chose not to be vaccinated. They're dying, and some of them are, you know, in the words of the Pennsylvania Dutch, too soon old, too late smart, and saying, I should have gotten vaccinated. And others who are going down with the ship and saying, oh, it's still a hoax. The mentalities that are involved, the two worlds really that the right wing and the left side of our policy live in, I think those are the two stories that bring them together. And I mean, there's other things that have occurred, but that's what I'm seeing right now.
I think that you get your finger on the on one story. I think the January 6th coup attempt, definitely the big political story, or at least the impetus to the big political story, because I think the political story is not so much the insurrection as the fact that it both is an example of and it spurred the continuation of the transformation of the Republican Party into a national party rather than a collection of state parties or factional groupings. All the talk about the fact that the Trump forces are expelling the non-Trump forces from the party is evidence that what will emerge is a single, disciplined, national political party. And on the other side, the competition, the Democrats, they are not engaging in that. That's not happening on the Democratic side. And therefore, what you're going to be confronted with is a single political force on the right, which will be an extreme rightist group, against a nominally united opposition, but one which is actually internally fractured and which therefore cannot present an effective opposition, and which may mean that the Democrats will disappear. Certainly they'll disappear if they evolve to be a national party like the Republicans have evolved. They'll be very different looking. How they'll emerge, what will emerge, we don't know. But I think that the big political story is the transformation of the two-party system from a collection of two, like the old joke went, I don't belong to any organized political party, I'm a Democrat, that party will disappear. And that we don't know anything about. We've never had that kind of a political situation in the United States.
Well, you know, what we have, though, behind that are also two different philosophies. The Democrats are running because they believe government can get certain things done and improve the lives of the populace.
Some Democrats, not all Democrats. I don't think you can make that case for Joe Manchin or for Kristen Sinema.
Oh, I think they want to get things. I think they want to get things done, but maybe not the same things as other people want.
Well, okay, fair enough. But in that case, all the Republicans want to get something done, but for the corporations and for the very rich.
Yeah, but that's all that they want to do. I mean,
they want to get things done, and they want the government to do that, and nothing else.
But they're more united in their opposition to doing things.
What they're united in their opposition to is the New Deal. That's what they care about. If you had looked at the government in Woodrow Wilson's times, if you look at it from that point of view, or Calvin Coolidge's times, both Democrats and Republicans were completely united in wanting to, the government to do very little.
Well, they're opposed to more than that, though. They're opposed to civil rights.
Well, Woodrow Wilson was the great segregationist governor, president.
He was. They're opposed to women's rights. Of course, when Wilson was president,
there were no rights.
They didn't have the right to vote. That came at the end of his presidency.
And not because of him.
No, but that's pretty much what holds them together. But again, I don't think they're that together. There's a lot of freelancing that goes along with it. They're just all freelancing in the same direction.
Okay. Listen, you're in the midst of the revolution. You're in the midst of their transformation of their party. So naturally, it's unsettled. But I'm talking about the trend. At some point, it'll get settled. Yeah. At some point, the people like Cheney will be knocked out, just like the non-Trumpers left on their own. At some point,
the question is,
it'll be homogeneous.
Yeah, well, and be careful, you know.
Careful.
A lot of them would say, oh, you know, don't like that word. They don't understand what that means, you know. If you called one of them homogeneous, they'd take offense.
Pop you in the mouth.
Yeah. On that. The question is, where do the Liz Cheneys or the Adam Kinzingers go?
They may just drop out of politics. Or there may be three parties. We haven't had that situation, but there might be. I mean, it's possible that the election laws don't favor it. It's that, and the election laws were, you know, crafted by a two-party system to maintain it as a two-party system. But you could change the election laws. The Republicans would have no interest in doing that.
They want to change election laws to rig it so only they are elected.
And that's what they're doing, right? Haven't they done that successfully so far in 19 states? They've only gotten started.
They've been trying, and they've been fairly successful. They're trying every possible method. I mean, you've got to give them an A for imagination.
How about Rand Paul? Did you tell me something about Rand Paul the other day?
Yeah, Rand Paul made a statement. First of all, you remember for years now I've been saying that there was this, I called it a conceit or hubris, that the Republicans think only they should be able to run things. And I attribute that back to the Gingrich era. But it's really evolved through a lot of other things. They've used the old method of gerrymandering very successfully. I believe that the Obama people dropped the ball when they got rid of Howard Dean and let the 2010 election decimate the Democrats at local level and state levels. And with Obama, they wanted to hold the presidency, the Democrats, and they forgot about the grassroots. And now what we have, we got the idea is that unless Republicans win, there's got to be fraud or rigged elections. And then we now have the Republicans doing a couple of things. One is they're now going after the people who count the votes so that they can only count what they want to count in the votes. And that's a very dangerous trend that we've never seen before in our country. It's what Ruth Ben-Ghiat talks about in Strongmen, the authoritarian, the fascist movement. But Rand Paul came up with a new one, as you said, this week, and he was complaining that the Democrats, they want to send out absentee ballots so that they can persuade people to vote for them. And that's how they're going to steal elections, by persuading people to vote for them.
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene was even more clear about it. She said that people who move from Democratic Party-controlled states into Republican Party-controlled states should not be allowed to vote.
Yeah, that's the next step, telling
fair
people
enough.
That
fair enough, right?
Who can vote and who can't. I mean, they've taken away the vote from people who have served time in prisons, disproportionately black people, poor people.
Don't forget the whole history of America from the end of Reconstruction to when? The 1960s was the disenfranchisement of the entire African-American population in the South.
Right. Right.
And that was like with a pencil stroke. Of course, it involved burning this town down, burning
violence.
That town down.
Well, yeah, a lot of
Ku Klux Klan lynching, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Intimate. A lot of people don't know what happened in Wilmington, North Carolina.
That's right.
Where blacks won a fair election, and a mob came in and essentially, you know, murdered and forced all the blacks out of town.
Yeah.
How dare you win? And of course, the Obama victory was a shock to their system. You know, we can't stand being ruled by someone of a different color. That's not the American way. You know, we've got to take America back. When they talk about taking America back, that's what they're talking about.
That's exactly what they're talking about, right? And it is the American way to disenfranchise whole swaths of the population. That's exactly what we're talking about. We've seen it. Women, at one point in the 19th century, it wasn't clear whether or not women had citizenship rights. In some places they voted, in other places they didn't. It was only in the mid of the century that became consolidated and they were disenfranchised. That's 50% of the population.
Anyway, yeah. That,
that took 100 years to overcome.
Yeah. Again, that Ruth Ben-Ghiat book pretty much outlines that it's a masculinity thing. And if you look at the leadership in this, even though you've got the Marjorie Taylor Greens and what have you, this is really a thing to have male dominance. And we see it in the laws on abortion and stuff like that coming
aboard. I think that's because there's a theocratic basis to a lot of the organizing, and the particular theology that is dominant is one that subordinates women in the theology. The theology says women are their proper places as the servant of the man. And not all religions hold that. Not all parts of all religions hold that. But the part that's dominant in the right wing is that part. So that becomes part of their politics.
There's the bumper sticker, a woman's place is in the House and in the Senate, too.
Right.
You know, but and we've seen more women elected to things, but the resistance now, the thing is, the resistance is a minority, but it's a very passionate minority, more tightly put together, as you pointed out. And the resistance to that is not nearly as consolidated and as worked up about it. And that's a big complaint that you hear, that the Democrats really aren't taking this threat seriously. It's more like an academic exercise or trying to play within the rules, while the other side, I call it asymmetric warfare.
The case that in a war, and politics is a war, one side and sometimes both sides are always preparing for the last war.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you have here. The Democrats are preparing according to the rules of the last political system. They don't seem to grasp that they're confronting a new political system. And that I think the people who lead the party will be forced out. Because I think the Trump people will be successful. They will hold on in the Republican Party. And it will not be possible to confront them with the type of Democratic Party and the type of Democratic Party leadership that Biden and the Clintons and the whole establishment represent.
Well, they're all going to age out. You know,
they age out, but, you know, there's always acolytes. I mean, after all, the Secretary of State's a young man. He's in his 40s. So you could expect that he's going to, you know, grow up and become something else. But I think his day is past because he represents a Democratic Party and an outlook on foreign affairs that is gone, that can't be done anymore. It wasn't successful when they did it, and it's not even going to be able to be implemented today. So it's not just that Biden will age out. It's all the people in the Biden administration and all the people who aspire to follow in that form. They'll all be gone because they'll not be able to confront the Republican opposition.
Well, the other thing, though, it gets back again to that 2010 election, we had the wipeout of a generation of Democrats who would have been percolating up right now, whereas you had this empowerment of a generation of Republicans who are, in fact, there now and leading the charge.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you could see if you look at county Democratic parties, for example, I know it very well in Susquehanna County. It's an atrophied organization. It's been doing the same thing for years. It has had the same leadership for years. In the recent primary and in the general election, there were something like 300 seats that were open that could be contested in the county, and the Democrats managed to find candidates for 12% of them. 12%. You know, it's not like there are no Democrats in the county. 300 open seats, there's 8,000 registered Democrats. You could have found 300 people if you had a vibrant organization. They don't have a vibrant organization. And that's what is going to happen in place after place after place until the people who lead atrophying organizations are wiped out and new leadership takes over and finds a new way to build an opposition to the do-nothing or do-bad Republican Party.
Well, beyond Stacey Abrams down in Georgia, there's few and far between.
And that shows you the turmoil that's going to involve, that's going to invest the Democrats. Because if there's only a handful now, but that handful represents the future, there's going to be great turmoil within the party in order for that handful to take over, for that outlook to take over, if that's the only outlook that can be successful. So in that sense, turmoil, you better welcome it, because there's no way out. There's no way to the – and it won't happen overnight. Stacey Abrams organized for 15 years before she became Stacey Abrams, and she hasn't won the election yet.
No.
But okay, but she got two Senate people elected. There's no question about it. She gets the credit. She got them elected. But it took 15 years. Well, imagine 15 years of consolidated Trump rule, Trumpist rule.
You're not going to have elections.
Well, it'll be, you may have a very violent political system. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be rigged elections, but
the election will be irrelevant. It'll be irrelevant, right? So if the elections are irrelevant, what becomes relevant? Mob rule? Second Amendment rights? That's what you got. And that's what's happened in every country where the ruling group figured out a way to get rid of elections. Elections, you know, are a very good way to maintain social peace and prevent change. But you got to allow the elections. If you don't allow the elections, then you don't have, in the end, you don't have social peace. You may be able to prevent change, but it's at the cost of a militarized country and a lot of death and a lot of torture and a lot of imprisonment, and it's expensive and it doesn't last.
No, and there's that worry about the military. Some of the top people and the top military brass are worried about different factions in the military and respecting things.
Right. There was that major general who was on NPR last week who said that he suspects that there'll be a military-led rebellion if the Democrats win in 2024. And he suspects, and so they asked him, well, will it be led by the rank and file, or will it be led by the officers? And he said, both.
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 Yeah, but, you know, we're turning dystopian here in the new year. What a way to start.
Well, that's what we're facing, I think. But that's the lesson of the coup.
Yeah, but we saw, that a large number of people in the coup on January 6th were military people or police people. And they've welcomed that. The Republicans have welcomed that type of participation.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, and look how the top brass of the corporate world reacts. There's a strike now. that's been going on for 3 months. The company is owned by Warren Buffett's holding company. The company in the last quarter increased its profits for the quarter by $217 million. We don't know what the profit of the company was. They won't reveal it, but they had to reveal their increase year over year. So the increase for the 3 months, $217 million increase. What do they demand of their workers? That the workers should give up their accrued vacation, that they should accept no pay increase the first year, and that the second year they should get a 1% pay increase, and in the third year, a 2% pay increase. That's the company demand. So Bernie Sanders writes to Buffett, Warren Buffett, who made his reputation as a great defender of the workers, and he's going to give his accrued fortune to charity. And he says to Buffett, how do you stand for this kind of management? How do you stand for workers being treated in this kind of disrespectful, undignified way and stealing from them what they've already gotten? Why don't you intervene and see to it that they get what, after all, is hardly an outrageous demand? And what's Buffett's answer? Has nothing to do with me. It's not my job to settle things like that. That's the liberal paragon of world capitalism, Warren Buffett. Now, a man like that will easily accommodate himself to the Trumpist GOP.
Well, that was the case of Germany in the 30s.
Exactly.
He'll give us what we want. So, and these folks think that they're better than Trump, that they can outsmart him or outfox him. And we know what those industrialists look like, in April and May of 1945.
That's right. That's exactly right. And before that, these wonderful men, of course, there were no women, but they operated slave labor factories.
Oh, yeah.
Their workforce was slaves. Yeah. Some advance in civilization. You go from free labor to slave labor.
Yeah.
But it was good for them.
It's good. Yeah. You're back to Ayn Rand. And only the things that are good for me and not good for the.
That's right. I don't think this is a good year that we're coming into. I think it's a year filled with danger. I think that's the lesson of 2021.
Well, we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn more this week when Trump gives his January 6th press conference, and the committee is going to start going public pretty soon and what they've learned. We'll see how that gets carried in the press, but it almost doesn't matter because there's a parallel media system that's grown up now.
Yeah. It also doesn't matter because we already know the answer. The question is, will we have the gumption to do the kind of organizing that needs to be done?
It's not just gumption. It's have the commitment.
Well, okay. Fair enough. The commitment, will we do the work, or will the tired past reign over the threatening future? This is a year of transition, I think, for progressive forces.
Well,
take a look at the world that we really live in, not the world we wish we lived in. Anyway, let's see how we get it through the first week of the new year. See you next year.
We're taking it 1 week at a time. But
1 week at a time.
But we still have to have a longer view.
We have to have a longer view. And let's see, if Trump is making his press conference on the 6th, we'll be able to discuss it when we meet again next week.
Yep.
All right.
I hope we didn't ruin everybody's week.
No. People should be fired up. People should be determined. People should be optimistic. It's the future you make yourself, but you got to realize the present that you're in. Otherwise, you won't succeed.
Yeah, you got to understand the past.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not repeat the mistakes.
No. All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time.